It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in Madrid, Spain. Before Guillermo Nieto was appointed CEO of Salmon Mundi Capital, he had spent 10 years at Interdin, where he served first in equity sales, and then he joined the analysis department as the analyst for the sectors of banks, airlines, and paper. Studying banks as an analyst, he found out the Austrian economics approach. He began his professional career during a rotational program in Chase Manhattan Bank. In his early years, he began managing family portfolios, applying value investing principles. On behalf of the MOI Global Membership Community, a very warm welcome to you, Guillermo. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John, and thank you for the manual of ideas for giving us this opportunity. We are Salmon Mundi Capital, which is a Spanish SICAV that trades in the alternative market MAB. As you said, our investment philosophy is based on value investing and the Austrian School of Economics. We invest all over the world in different asset classes, and we are usually interested in sectors or assets that are out of favor, and we invest with a long-term horizon. You can see here our profiles, and you can see more information on our webpage, salmonmundi.com. Today we are going to present Sberbank, which we think it's an interesting opportunity. It's the main Russian bank with a leading position in both loans and deposits. It's the most profitable bank among the biggest international banks with an ROE of 24%, and it just trades at 1.2 times book value and a PE of 5.6. It's very efficient in terms of costs, and it has a good asset quality. And we think that Russia is interesting for banking as a whole since it has a low level of debt. Public and private in aggregate is almost 80%, which is much lower than other emerging or developed countries. And Russian equities are very cheap. They are trading at 7 times earnings of the past 10 years. As for the bank, it was founded in 1841. It's the leading Russian banks, and it's controlled by the state, by the Central Bank of Russia. It's got a 77 billion market cap, and is the leader in both retail deposits with a 45 market share and in corporate loans. It has sound capital ratios with a tier one of 12.3. It's got over 93 million clients and has 14,200 branches. And it was named by Brand Finance as the second strongest brand in the world. We can see here how is the ownership. It's owned by Bank of Russia and mainly foreign legal entities. The management, we think, has been very successful. Is the CEO Salman Greve, which was named in 2007. He's from a German family origin that were deported to Kazakhstan. He studied law and later worked for the St. Petersburg local administration. There he met people that would be very important in his career. Eventually, he became the first deputy minister for state properties and the minister of economic development and trade from 2000 to 2007. And he has a liberalizing profile. He was in favor of privatization, lowering taxes, and he was a major advocate of Russia entering the World Trade Organization. We think that with Herman Greve, the philosophy of the bank changed. They were more customer-centric and more focused in technology. This focus in technology has helped the bank lower costs, and also they see that the profession, they see them not just a bank, but a professional service company, and they see tech companies as potential competitors. And in terms of customer satisfaction, they have a high level, and the majority of customers would recommend the bank to other customers. We can see here the leading position that Sberbank has in the Russian banking system. It's over 30% of the assets, followed by VTB or Gazprom Bank. The market share is the leader in all the categories, with a special stronghold in retail deposits and in mortgages. And numbers in Russia have been going down over the past year, and we think that this is also positive for Sberbank because the market share of the five major players has been increasing. As for the geography, Sberbank is mainly a Russian, Russian bank. It's present in 22 countries, but most of the profit comes from Russia. And moreover, with the sale of Danish Bank, a Turkish bank they had, and they have recently sold. And our region is fairly balanced, with more weight in Moscow and fairly balanced among the different regions. As for its balance sheet, its loans are mainly for corporates. 65% of the loans are for corporates and 35% are for retail. They have a rather high weight in big companies in these loans. And these loans are mainly, the main sectors are oil and gas, real estate, and metallurgy. And in terms of retail, these are mainly for mortgages and consumer loan. And where are they experiencing the highest growth? Mainly retail lending and SMEs. We can see here the loans by industry, which is by individuals. The main weight is individuals, and then it's fairly balanced among different industries. In terms of asset quality, they have a good asset quality with non-performing loans at 4%, which is much better than the sector, with 178% coverage ratio. The annual provisions were 115 basis points, and they, after 2010, they have been in the range from 0 to 217 basis points. And this non-performing loans, they spike in the crisis of 2008, and since then, they have been coming down, and they have been in the range of 4 or 5% in the past years. And they also have an investment grade rating, both by Fitch and Moody's. We can see here how the non-performing loans went sharply up in the financial crisis, and since then, they have been rather contained. As for the investment portfolio, is mainly bonds. 98% of the bond portfolio is of the investment portfolio is bonds, and these are mainly public bonds, mainly from the state and other public entities. While corporate bonds are just 35%. Most of them are investment grade. And one positive thing that we've seen is that the investment portfolio has been de-risked over the past year, and the exposure of equities has been coming down, and now the exposure to equities is very small. We can see here the exposure of the investment portfolio, which is mainly bonds of the state, which we think has a sound quality, and then corporate bonds and other public entities. In terms of loan to deposits, it's below 100%, 100% in rubles and circa 65% in other hard currency, mainly dollars, and we think it's fairly balanced. In terms of deposits, one of the strengths of the in bank deposit is a percentage higher than in other countries. In terms of wholesale funding, they have been reducing it. Now it represents just 1% of liabilities. It has gone down from almost 4% in past years, and it's mainly long-term. We think that the wholesale funding reduction and the large base of deposits makes the bank more resilient to market shocks than was in the past. And in terms of capital, they have a sound capital position of Tier 1 12.3 with a high tangible capital among the highest of the largest international bank. And with the sale of Danish Bank, the capital ratio will improve despite some macro prudential measures that the central bank has been imposed. And they expect it to be above 13% for this year. And they have maintained good capital levels even in 2008 and 2015 in the bubble crisis. We can see that the bank has had good capital ratios over this period. In terms of macro items, their assets are mainly in rubles, but they also have a rather high weight of exposure to US dollar. So a 10 rubles per dollar devaluation does not have a very big impact on P&L, but it does have an impact on equity. It reduces capital from 46 to 50 basis points. A parallel shift interest rates have an impact on net interest income from 20 to 22 billion rubles. And another important item, macro item, is oil. They think that the Sberbank is resilient, even if the oil prices fall hard to $35 per barrel. Management thinks that they will achieve a satisfactory ROEs even in that scenario. So the management think that overall the bank is now less vulnerable than it was in the past to external shocks. And one important sale that they've done is the sale of Danish Bank that represented almost 9% of the assets. It was sold at 1.2 times book value, and the proceeds will be almost 5 billion, which will enable Danish Bank to, Sberbank to increase its capital ratio. They do not expect to give an extraordinary dividend, but just to grow their ordinary business. In terms of non-financial investments, this has been one of the focus of the bank. They are mainly in technology. They've spent almost 3% of the net income over the past 3 years accumulated. They want to leverage their strong client portfolio, and they plan to, and they've invested in different sectors, and including joint ventures with Yandex or Mailroom. In terms of P&L, they have a high net interest margin of almost 5.4 with loans of with an average yield of 9.8 and deposits or 4.1. The management expects to keep these high margins because they are focusing more on retail loans and on SMEs, which have higher margins. We can see that the margin has been fairly high, with a little compression, or rather a compression in the 2015 crisis, but since then it has rebounded. Commissions have been another important driver of growth. It has been a bright spot. Their highest exposures is in bank cards and cash transactions. And they are very important because they already cover 69% of the expenses, and they expect to have a high growth in this segment, with a growth, double-digit growth until 2020. In terms of the expenses, this is another advantage of the bank, with a low cost to income ratio of 33%. We think that the management team has been key in this reduction. The cost income has been going down from almost 48% to current 33%. Among the measures that the management has taken were the digitalization, the centralization of technology, and workforce reduction. We can see that how the cost income ratio has been coming down over the past years. The cost of risk spiked during the crisis, and then since then has been going down and has been in the range of 100 to a little more than 200 basis points over past years. And due to this good performance in the different items, net income has spike. They've got a $1 trillion objective for 2020, and we think that it's rather remarkable that this good performance has been achieved in a weak GDP growth scenario. Profitability has also been another strength of the bank. It's one of the most profitable banks, with an ROE of 24% versus international peers of almost 8%. Even in 2008 and 2015, Sberbank had positive ROEs, and especially over the last years, in a rather weak growth scenario. We can see that they had positive ROEs even in 2009 or 2015. And the dividend, they have a high dividend yield of almost 7%. The payout will be 43.5, but they want to increase up to 50%, and this will represent an almost 10% dividend yield. Russia is encouraging state-owned enterprises to increase dividend yields, and this payout is conditioned to the achievement of certain KPIs. We can see like the change they have experienced in payout, which has been going up rather sharply, especially in the past years. And this is the strategic plan. They want to achieve a 1 trillion ruble net income for 2020 with cost income around 30% and the 3-year average of almost 20%. And how does Sberbank rank among competition? We think it has an excellent franchise. It's 1/3 of the assets with a leading position in both loans and deposits. It's the most cost efficient with a better asset quality, and it's the most profitable Russian bank. To see the importance that Sberbank has over the Russian banking system, it's almost 62% of the net income. And we can see how Sberbank compares with the largest banks in terms of market cap. It has the best ROE. And also, if we compare it just to European banks, it ranks among the highest of all European banks. In terms of cost to income, it also ranks very well compared to the largest banks in the world. And if we just compare it to its European peers, it ranks almost the best among its European counterparts. And what could be some risk for the investment thesis? We think the global recession could have an impact, although Sberbank is more insulated than it was in the past. Additional sanctions on Russia could also have an impact. A large slump in oil prices, since the Russian economy has a rather high leverage. A sharp devaluation of the Russian ruble. Aggressive interest rates by the central bank, or current management leaving the company, since they have had a very good performance over these years. And what could be some opportunities? The removal of sanctions, higher oil prices, a sharp appreciation of the ruble, an acceleration of the Russian GDP growth, which has been rather weak over the past years, higher investment in domestic shares, since the local retail and local institutions invest very little in domestic shares, and a lower stake of the government. That was one of the things that Herman Greff commented that would be positive for the bank, and he sort of encouraged it. And terms of valuation, we think it's very cheap. It's just a 5.6 times earnings, at 1.2 times book value. And we think that with a 21% normalized ROE and 12% cost of equity, we think the stock price could have a 70% upside potential. If we compare it to other emerging market banks, it trades at almost 50% discount. And we think also that they will achieve their strategic plan, which could also mean a 10% dividend yield. If we compare it to other emerging market banks, it trades almost at half the valuation. We think is rather cheap. And also in terms of price to book value, it compares very well compared to other emerging market banks. And the emerging market banks have not always traded at low multiples. We can see that from 2002 to 2007, they had a relatively high ROEs and a price-to-book ratio that was in the range of 2 times and even spiking to almost over 3.5 times. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the Russian economy, since for banks it's very important in the economy. There has been some factors that have weighed in the economy, like the sanctions. Due to the annexation of Crimea, the US and the EU and other countries imposed some sanctions on Russia. These sanctions were mainly related to limiting technology to the oil companies. They limited the access to credit by companies, and they also imposed these travel restrictions. The sanctions and lower oil prices led to the devaluation of the ruble, but we think that the Russian Central Bank managed the crisis successfully. They rose rates and did not impose capital controls and let the ruble fluctuate freely. Eventually, the ruble devaluation helped exporters and they raised their reserves. And now, after some years, current interest rates are at 7%, and they target an inflation rate between 4 to 4.5%. We can see in this slide how the US dollar ruble was fairly stable, and due to the sanctions and oil prices, it devaluated and has been rather stable since. This is one of the things that we commented before, that the GDP growth has been rather weak. And even in this scenario, Sberbank has managed a very positive growth and very profit, very positive ROEs. And also one factor that has weighed has been the lower oil prices, which have an impact in the economy, as we can see in the chart. But there are also some positives happening in the Russian economy, which we think that are rather significant. For example, the GDP per capita in US dollar has almost gone up six times. That's the most among the highest among emerging countries. And we think this performance has been rather remarkable over the past 20 years. The public debt has been going sharply down. It was over 140%, and it's just 15%, which is the lowest among the big countries. And inflation has been contained. Interest rates went sharply up, and eventually they contained inflation and has been going down since 2015. And we think that also there has also some improvements happened in the Russian economy. For example, according to the World Bank, the ease of doing business is Russia ranks 31 out of 190. And it ranks, for example, better than France, Poland, or the Czech Republic. One of the strengths of the economy, we think, is the high level of reserves. It's the fourth country by reserves, and it has a 7% current account surplus. The reserves now fully cover their external debt, and the external debt has also been coming down. And if we compare to other emerging market countries, Russia has one of the best ratio of reserves to external debt among other countries. In other countries, this is around 20 to 30%. We can see how the level of external debt has been going down while the reserves have been going up. Another strength of the Russian economy, we think this is the low level of debt. We think this is especially remarkable since debt has exploded, especially in developed markets, but also in other emerging market countries. And they have just 80% of public and private debt to GDP. The level of public debt is very low, just 15% compared to 100% in developed countries. They also have a low level of corporate debt ratio and a low level of household debt ratio to GDP, much lower than Eastern European countries or developed countries. A mortgage debt is especially low at 6% versus 40% in other developed countries. We can see in this chart how debt has been going up in advanced economies and emerging market economies, while in Russia is rather low. Even if we exclude China and emerging market economies, where it has a high weight, Russia compares very favorably compared to its emerging market counterparts. In terms of equities, Russian market we think is very cheap. It's trading at 7 times CAPE, which is the lowest level of the main equity markets. It's almost a 50% discount versus other emerging markets, and they have not always traded at this low ratio. They are almost 40% undervalued to compared to its historical average. And they have not always have these low multiples. For example, before the financial crisis, many Russian companies were trading at similar multiples that companies in developed markets. And one thing that has the CDS, we think that has been reflecting the improvement in the Russian economy. It has compressed from levels of almost 6% to 1%, but the PE ratio has not been reflecting the improvement that has been happening in the economy. So we think that there is some improvement for re-rating. Also, in terms of a dividend yield, Russia ranks very high. It's almost does almost have a 7% dividend yield, which is very high compared to both emerging countries and developed markets. This is the CAPE ratio that we were commenting before. It has the lowest ratio among the international countries. And also, they are undervalued compared to its historical valuation, almost 40% undervalued. And another asset market that we think could give support to lending is the real estate market. Real estate investment have almost gone down 70% from 2012 to 2018. And Russia has a low square meter per capita constructed compared to Eastern European countries, Europe or the US. A mortgage debt to GDP is very low, only 6% versus 25% of Eastern European countries. We can see here how Russia ranks very low in terms of square meters per capita constructed, and also extremely low in terms of mortgages to GDP, which we think gives margin to lend more and to grow in this segment. And we think that this is already happening because the share of mortgage loan has been gaining weight since 2007. So all in all, we think that Sberbank is an interesting opportunity. It's the market leader in Russia with a special strong position in deposits. Is very profitable with an ROE of 24%, with a low cost to income, and it just trades at 1.2 times a book value and a PE of 5.6 with a dividend yield of 7%. And Russia as a whole, we think that it is interesting for banking since it has a low penetration of credit, debt is low, the public and private debt is just 80%, and Russian equities, we think as a whole, are very cheap. So thank you, John, and thank you, Manuel of Ideas, or all your listeners for giving us this opportunity. Thank you.
Guillermo, thank you so much for this very interesting and in-depth presentation. Perhaps we could start a little bit with geographic exposure. Clearly, this is a Russian bank with the business coming from Russia predominantly, but do they have a strategy to expand at all in Eastern Europe? And what do you think?
Yeah, they have a small position, but we think that they are not expanding, but going back to their main market, which is Russia, and where it's low penetrated in terms of credit. And with the sale of Danish Bank, we think that it marks that, like, their strategy, yeah, going back home and grow where they are under-penetrated and where they have a strong position. That further expanding, we think that they are limiting their international exposure.
Can you talk a little bit about how you think about the inflation risk? I know the Austrian school would suggest that the current reported level of inflation might be too low and that inflation might accelerate. What would that do to the business?
Well, I would think that the Central Bank of Russia has done an excellent job, led by Nabiullina. We think that if inflation eventually accelerated, they would they would raise rates, but also since they have a rather high oil, it depends on where inflation would come from. If it comes from oil prices, also we think that benefit the economy would benefit. But overall, we think that the central bank has done an excellent job, and they would contain it, we think.
How do you think about Russia demographics long term in terms of just the market itself growing for the bank?
We think that's one of the weak spots. Demographic is not very, very healthy, because they have low growth, but we think that if some reforms are implemented, that growth could accelerate. So we think that even in this rather low growth environment, the bank has had excellent ratios and excellent ROEs, and we could see that the negative sort of are priced in, we believe. And if there is some sort of improvements, we think that it could be very good for the bank.
How do you think about any technological risks in terms of fintech or anything like that, or it does not really apply to Russia?
That it's a risk, and the management, we think, is very obsessed with that, with a technological disruption. We think that's one of the reasons that they are investment highly in these tech companies. But one of the strengths that we think they have is the strong market share and the 93 million of active clients, and they have that base to leverage. No, so I think that the bank is conscious of that risk, but they have a very strong position, a huge number of branches of over 14,000, and we think that they are well aware and alert if there is any change.
And maybe last question from me for members who are interested in tracking this idea over time. What, in your view, would be the key data points to track to gauge whether the thesis is playing out?
We think that they could track performance as a whole of the Russian economy, oil prices, evolution of net interest income, evolution of loan growth, evolution of commissions, which has been is not very high compared to in terms of the total operating income, but they are growing very, very strong, and they have margin to improve. Overall, the health of the Russian economy, since banks are have a high leverage to the performance of the economy.
And maybe just one more question, if you'll allow me. The ROE is quite high. How is the bank able to achieve such impressive ROE?
We think that the high deposit base is one of the key, since they have a high deposit base, lower cost of funding, and so they leverage this high ROE. But we think that the high market share is one of the reasons.
Great. Well, at this point, I would just like to encourage our members to feel free to follow up with you, Guillermo, directly by email, or to contact us, and we will be happy to facilitate an introduction. Thank you very much for taking the time to be here and share your analysis with our members.
Thank you, John, and thank you to all the listeners.
Goodbye for now.
Goodbye.